Welcome to Issues in Education, a nationwide program dedicated to moral and academic excellence in America. And now, here are your hosts for Issues in Education, Bob and Jerry Boyd.
Today's program is a classic. Listen carefully. The ACLU protested teaching monogamous heterosexual marriage at school because they said that would be teaching religion. That's incredible. Simply teaching marriage in the context of one man and one woman would be establishing religion. Well, who's to say what's right? Who's to say what's wrong? It may be wrong for you, but it's not wrong for me. Who's to say monogamy or heterosexuality is right? Who's to decide for all others what's right and wrong? And so schools have said they can't decide for everybody what's right and what's wrong. So schools no longer teach absolute values, but they teach relative values or situation ethics or value-free education, where the teacher doesn't teach values but acts like an amateur psychologist to help students focus on their feelings, to help them determine what's right and wrong for them for the situation. One of the men responsible for replacing absolute values with value-free education in the schools is our guest today, psychologist Dr. W.R. Colson. Value-free education got its birth in the schools through psychologists Abe Maslow, Carl Rogers, and Dr. W.R. Colson. Dr. Colson is a professor. He has two doctorate degrees. He's an author. And today's program is an incredible confession by one who helped the schools abandon teaching right from wrong. Dr. Colson apologizes for his part in removing values from the schools so he can help to undo the damage which has resulted in increased teen pregnancy, abortion, smoking, violence, and the virtual unraveling of our society. Dr. Colson, why did you ever start value-free education?
Well, I was enthusiastic for the valid therapeutic insights of my teacher and colleague, Carl Rogers. I also worked with Abraham Maslow. The three of us were associates at the Western Behavioral Sciences Institute in La Jolla, California, just south of San Clemente. And I was impressed with their arguments that, in fact, we needed a new kind of education for an era in which change was very rapid and events were unprecedented. But I retained my scientific interest, as they did also. We did not begin to sell this so much as we wanted to test the theory that affective education would be as effective in helping people find their own way in the classroom as it had been in the clinic. So that my enthusiasm for their ideas carried me beyond the point when the data began to come in, and the data showed that, in fact, the theory was wrong. I dropped out of the movement in 1973. Abraham Maslow dropped out in 1970, shortly before he died. But Dr. Rogers had been, in a sense, co-opted by his followers and continued to make radical claims off and on the rest of his life. But I was pleased to see that in the last book that he wrote in 1983, he called this whole pattern of educational experimentation based on psychotherapy a pattern of failure. So he too saw the problem. He was capable of returning to his scientific orientation, but given the enthusiasm of Californians for anything new for a while there, after arriving in California from the Midwest, both he and I got carried away with the vision of being some kind of new sort of guru, I'm afraid.
Yeah, Californians love new gurus, especially novel ideas and exciting new people. It seems like the rest of the country follows suit, though. But you, Dr. Colson, you saw your psychological theory as a failure because it took good kids and made them bad. It took non-smoking children and it made them smokers.
There's some interesting research conducted on a grant from the American Cancer Society by Daniel Yankelovic and some of his associates. Yankelovic is a very well-known survey researcher. He found that there is such a thing among youngsters as the smoker's personality. The youngsters who start to smoke, as opposed to youngsters who stay away from cigarettes, are more aggressive socially. The ones who won't accept the offer of a cigarette typically are a little bit timid socially and in one sense could be called backward. In other words, they are not yet adult and don't want to pose as adults. But these kids who fall for the line, like the cigarette made by R.J. Reynolds for young women, more cigarettes, dare to be more, never settle for less, or the boys who come to where the flavor is, come to Marlboro Country, those kids are posing as adults. And when you sit them down in a classroom group with kids who are not experienced with drugs and not experienced with sex, the line of influence runs from the experienced ones, the risk takers, to the inexperienced ones, the innocent ones.
How true. I've seen that in my own life. As a child, we all gathered around the guy who took the chances. The one who lit the cigarette was the exciting guy. We all wanted to learn from his experience. But that's the message for the schools, not to have a teacher tell what's right and wrong. Naturally, children are going to experiment with what's wrong. The only trouble is cigarettes and drugs are easy to become addicted to before a child can know the danger.
Oh, yes. These programs backfire. They drag good kids down, and they don't help the youngsters who are already in trouble. It was a very big mistake, and there's not been, in 15 years of research now, another study than those which show that, in fact, the method is a big mistake. It is sponsored, interestingly enough now, co-sponsored by the tobacco industry. The tobacco industry has given hundreds of thousands of dollars to an organization called Quest International, which has programs in the schools of California as well as the schools of all the other states in this country, programs with names like Skills for Living, Skills for Adolescents, Skills for Growing for elementary school kids, and R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company is the co-sponsor. And that's a very revealing fact, because adults won't start to smoke today. Only children will start to smoke, but only if they're approached in this permissive and destructive way, and that's exactly what these programs do.
Are you saying that it's these programs, these classes in our public schools that are used by industries, in this case the tobacco industry, to get new cigarette smokers?
Oh, yes, because, you see, they need a million customers, new customers this year, at the least a million new customers in this country alone, to replace those smokers who die or quit. About 300,000 Americans are going to die before their time this year because they started smoking when they were teenagers. Well, of those million new customers that the tobacco industry is going to get this year, over 900,000 of them are going to be children, because adults are smart enough to believe the Surgeon General's warning that, in fact, cigarettes cause cancer, cause emphysema, cause early heart disease. But children need direction in order to turn away from the seductive advertising of the tobacco industry. And this method of classroom psychotherapy, if you will, affective education, withholds direction from them. So the research, again, is very clear on this. And my interest is primarily that of a scientist, a researcher. The research shows that one way to get kids to become involved with drugs as to become involved with sexual experimentation is to sit them down in a classroom, non-directive group, and they are going to have a better chance of hurting themselves than if they never had that experience in the first place.
Dr. Colson, I've seen people dying of lung cancer, and it has to be one of the most terrible ways to die. It's extremely painful, it's gross, it's ugly. And as you watch someone die of cancer, you wonder who got them started smoking in the first place. And if you think that they were started on cigarettes just to give the tobacco industry more money, that's a crime. It's the same as a heroin pusher, except we put the dope pusher behind bars. Maybe we should put the cigarette pushers behind bars too. But what about the school's role? The school so gullibly goes along with value-free education. They even persuade parents that it's a great idea.
Oh, yes. It's non-directive again. It tries to get parents not to tell children what to do, but to get them in touch with their feelings. Let your children explore. Let them find their own values is the message of this parent training program. And again, it's insidious, because the predictable effect of this kind of lack of direction from parents is that children will turn to the peer group, and children will turn to the advertisers of dangerous products and dangerous philosophies. I defy listeners on your radio station to come up with a non-directive radio ad. They just don't exist. Everybody's got something to sell, and if mom and dad and the schools aren't in there competing with those who have dangerous things to sell, then our children are going to become customers of those manufacturers and purveyors of dangerous philosophies.
Are you saying then there is really no value-free education?
No, there is no value-free education. Everybody has something to sell. We were selling back in the late 60s and early 70s value-free education. That was a position that we took. America was founded by people who believe in God, who believe in the commandments, who believe that children have to rise into citizenship, that they cannot be given citizenship while they're still too young to make their own decisions. And the philosophy and theory and practices which opposed that all-American foundational view was in fact not value-free, but designed to undercut the health of this country, and we're seeing that happen now.
Indeed. Our guest today, Dr. W.R. Colson, apologizing for his part in leading our nation away from the values, the fundamental values that established this country. Dr. Colson, how pervasive is this philosophy?
These programs have really gained major inroads into the public and even the Christian schools. There are drug education programs with names like Here's Looking at You, Ombudsman, Project Charlie, Quest, Skills for Living, Skills for Adolescents, Skills for Growing, and now there are sex education programs. A school district no longer needs to spend taxpayers' money for sex education because the manufacturers of birth control pills will give them the program free because they too covet children as customers. And the only way they're going to get children to be customers for contraceptives is to get them sexually active. And although they don't see that their programs do this, I see it because I'm familiar with the research. Children who go through non-directive sex education become sexually active, so it's no surprise to find Ortho Pharmaceuticals, the largest manufacturer of the birth control pill in this country, sponsoring a free sex education program for schools called Straight Talk. It doesn't talk straight. It doesn't sell abstinence. Rather, it sells contraception. And in order to do that, children have to learn first to misbehave. But you see, the whole theory behind what we were doing is that there is no such thing as misbehavior. It all depends on how you define it for yourself. That theory was very wrong-headed.
And yet we still see educators not teaching right from wrong, not teaching honesty or loyalty or kindness. They say there is no such thing as right or wrong. What's right for you may not be right for someone else. That's called situation ethics or value-free education. They teach there are no absolutes, and they're absolutely sure about it. But Dr. Colson, what about other parts to your philosophy? What about this too much psychology?
Well, psychology is good in its place. Psychology is, in fact, scientific in its laboratory elements. We've been able to learn in psychology some important things about, say, thresholds of pain or about the apparatus of vision and hearing. But clinical psychology tends to be more, if I can use the term, religious than that. Clinical psychology emerged from the beliefs of Sigmund Freud, who was a self-conscious and self-proclaiming atheist, and is still afflicted with the point of view that it can be a better religion than the religions which have been the backbone of this country. So that too much psychology is psychology trying to take the place of religion. Both Abe Maslow and Carl Rogers said things like this from time to time in interviews. I am more religious than other people. And what they really meant was, I'm not a churchgoer. I'm in touch with God directly. I don't need the intervention of a church or a scripture. All I need to do is consult myself. Well, both men had reason before they died to regret that they had been quite so peremptory in claiming to be more religious than other people. But too much psychology is simply a kind of secular humanism masquerading as an effective psychotherapeutic approach to the classroom. It has been badly misused in the service of what many of your listeners will know as secular humanism. John Dewey was one of the signers of the original Humanist Manifesto, and Dewey, together with Freud, is the other major name for the origins of TMP, too much psychology.
How easy was it to get the American teachers to go along with this program?
Well, we've been working on the American, if I can link myself with that movement, which I now reject, we've been working on the American teachers and the educational establishment since before the turn of the century. That was way back in 1897, John Dewey wrote his first anti-religious tract. He also wrote a paper called My Pedagogic Creed. And it really was a creed. It really was a religious point of view. It just didn't admit of belief in God. Dewey said we've got to replace the churches in this country with what he called a religious attitude toward life, an openness to all kinds of experience. And it took a while, but American manufacturers of dangerous products for children, I include birth control pills and I include tobacco and other drugs, have caught on to the potential for profit in Deweyism for selling these things to children. If we can persuade parents and school board members that, in fact, the best thing to be done for children is to help them be open to experience, then there's no more reason to turn off the television set when something bad comes on, because bad now is redefined, not as being objectively recognizable, but as however you feel about it. So if you like pornography, then it's good for you. And there's an expression that I heard way back in the 1960s and continually through the 70s when I was involved in encounter groups, the expression, for me. For me, pornography is not bad. And there was no answer to that because the source of morality was placed within the individual.
So someone says your religion may be good for you, but I'm happy without the Lord. Well, that may be fine for now, but one day they'll come face to face with the absolute God himself. And that, quote, for me business won't make it. But it's sad to think that children are not just being taught that there are no absolutes, there is no God with a capital G, but they're being trained to think that they are little gods with a small g.
Up at Esalen Institute, a parallel institution to our own Western Behavioral Sciences Institute, Esalen being up at Big Sur, the saying was, thou art God. There is no God except the God within you. And that was a situation and a claim just begging for exploitation by industries like big tobacco and big contraception.
And so the children become a source unto themselves. They are not accountable to parents or to God, only themselves. Is it any wonder there's increased gang warfare, drive-by shootings, weapons at school? When one so-called God gets in the way of another so-called God, violence erupts. We're programming children for self-destruction. For what? So tobacco, alcohol, and drug pushers can have more money? At one time, our guest, Dr. W.R. Colson, promoted and, in fact, initiated value-free education, which is the basis of these problems. Dr. Colson, why did you change?
Well, simply that I'm an empiricist. I kept my eyes open, I looked at the evidence, and there was not one bit of evidence which favored our hypothesis that classroom psychotherapy would be a good thing. There was a contribution to illiteracy. Children began to take the position that it didn't matter how they spelled as long as the teacher understood what they meant. And so no longer were children being held to a standard. Rather, teachers were being held to a standard of understanding, which was appropriate to the clinic but not appropriate to the classroom. So that the direction of meaning, if I can put it that way, was turned on its head in the classroom. Rather than the requirement put on children that they express their meaning clearly, that they use good grammar, for example, correct spelling, that they name facts as they really are in the real world, the burden was put on the teacher to take the child's meaning no matter what he said. So if a child misspelled a word, he was supposed to get an A as long as the teacher could figure out what it meant. Well, this was a direct path to illiteracy in this country. And when the data began coming in on the decline of literacy, for example, in 1983, the report A Nation at Risk said that we were making war on our own children. When that kind of data began coming in, the Stanford drug studies began coming in, and then out of Ohio State began coming these studies which showed that children who go through sex education actually tend to become sexually active as opposed to those who don't have sex education, I began to realize that this was a very bad proposition that we'd been putting forward in the educational establishment. So that Rogers and I both stopped the series that we were doing for Charles E. Merrill. Rogers' own resignation from the Merrill series of textbooks was interesting. He said, "I realize that I don't have good judgment lately." He was encouraging things that his better judgment would have led him to say should not have been encouraged, but that his ideology of self-validation and self-exploration and self-esteem, his ideology of self had interfered with his own good judgment. And he faced that, and I credit him with having withdrawn from the program. And in 1973, he and I both stopped that series. But it was really too late because the thing had gotten rolling by then, and values clarification, which is another classroom adaptation of Rogerianism, had really gotten up steam.
Well, Dr. Colson, we're glad that you did get out, and we're glad that you're telling others so the harm can be lessened or undone. At one time, American education had a firm basis in God, the Ten Commandments, right and wrong, with real absolutes. But subtly, slowly, our nation has changed by being changed through the youth and the children of this land. How did it happen? How has self replaced God so that self-esteem, self-exploration, self-gratification has replaced God, country, responsibility, and duty? Try to introduce biblical principles at a school, and you'll hear them say, "Don't force your religion on the rest of us." Well, it was men such as Dr. Colson, Maslow, and Rogers who tried and almost succeeded in changing the religion of a nation under God to under self. Dr. Colson, why did you want to change America's thinking?
It's other people's thinking that we didn't credit, but we credited our own thinking very much. So it was really fundamentally totalitarian and anti-democratic. We wanted everybody to have our thoughts and not their own. And when we saw that, at least when Maslow and I saw it, we dropped out. Unfortunately, we dropped out much too quietly. We entered the field of affective education with great fanfare, and we crept out with nary a word, and that's why I'm trying to speak up now to try to set the record straight.
Well, bless you for that, Dr. Colson, but let's survey the damage. Emerson said ideas rule the world. Look at how an idea has changed this country. Look at how an idea has destroyed an entire school system. Dr. Colson, you had a part in destroying the Immaculate Heart school system of colleges, high schools, and elementary schools. It no longer exists. Dr. Colson, what happened to the Immaculate Heart school system?
The Immaculate Heart school system was a very fine Roman Catholic parochial school system up and down the West Coast with almost 60 schools, including three high schools and lots of elementary schools and a very fine liberal arts college in Los Angeles. Those nuns agreed to allow us to experiment on their school system beginning in 1967. We were going to turn the youngsters of those schools and their faculty members on to the idea of feeling exploration in classrooms rather than objective orientation. And the schools collapsed. There is no more Immaculate Heart school system, and there are very few Immaculate Heart nuns left anymore. Some 350 of them got so enamored of the idea of the exploration of self that they left the Catholic Church en masse. And so many of them now that I hear from feel stranded and feel betrayed by us. We had a bad idea, we ran an experiment, and it cost them their own religious vocations. So that was the biggest event that opened my eyes, because I had had a considerable part as the coordinator of that project in launching that experiment. There were lots of other problems created for the Catholic Church by the popularity of what is called sensitivity training and encounter groups.
Oh, yes, I remember. Sensitivity, encounter groups, these were really a fad in California in the 60s and 70s. But these feeling-centered or affective education, it breaks down natural inhibitions. It promotes promiscuity. It draws people inward to self to supposedly get in touch with their feelings. But parents of the children at Immaculate Heart didn't like what they saw, so they quit sending their children to the Immaculate Heart school system, and the lack of enrollment helped shut down the institution.
That was one of the reasons. The parents of the high school students, for example, did not want their children experimented with, and there was a tendency on the part of our staff to see those parents as being selfish. we tended to feel things like this. Well, you just want your child to get into an Ivy League school, so of course you don't want time wasted, as you say, on classroom encounter groups. You want academics for selfish reasons. Well, now I recognize the selfishness of our own position. We wanted the children to honor our profession and not their parents' own profession. The word profession is interesting because it means not just a task group, an occupation, but it also means an act of faith. Mothers and fathers have always had faith that their children can rise above their circumstances. In the ghetto, one sees this. If we live in a bad neighborhood, by golly, our children are not going to have to do that. If I've not been to college, by golly, my children are going to go to college. So yes, indeed, when the schools wouldn't back down and continued to honor our commitments rather than the commitments of the parents who were paying the tuition for these children, in fact, the college began to lose enrollment, and that's why the Immaculate Heart College collapsed, because they couldn't get funds anymore from parents who were concerned that their children were adopting a psychological faith rather than becoming more firmly established in their own Roman Catholic faith. So what we have to recognize is that psychologism is a faith in itself, and it is a competing religion, and there is no place in the American system for a state religion. So I urge your listeners to do what they can to try to get too much psychology out of the school.
Thanks, Dr. Coulson, and thanks for wanting to help rectify the damage that you helped to cause. But I think the blame is not just yours, nor Maslow or Rogers, but all of society. This American society was ripe for chasing after other gods, especially the god of self, which is really no god at all. Well, there you have it, the confessions of one who helped America switch religions. Psychology can be what many have suspected all along, a religion. A competing religion that helped destroy more than just one school, the Immaculate Heart Schools. It's in fact destroying a whole generation of schools, the church and society at large. As it substitutes Maslow-Dewian fraud, Freud that is, for Moses, Jesus, and St. Paul. So when someone tells you not to bring religion into the schools, what they're really saying is don't bring your religion into the schools, because they don't want the competition. We admire you, Dr. Coulson. We admire your courage to turn from psychology and speak out against the damage that it can do. It's not without risk and cost to you. We know that. But the cost for not speaking out, for Dr. Coulson to remain silent, was too great. And the cost for us to remain silent will be too great also, because it will allow our society to disintegrate. Allow me to challenge you to speak out. It's obvious we need to reinstate absolute values in our schools. The values that our nation was established with. And don't let anyone tell you that there are no absolutes. Will you do your part in telling others the truth and restoring righteousness, absolute righteousness to our land? And God bless you as you do.
Please share this important message with others. Psychology is a religion, and it is a contradiction to Christianity. Please ask for tape number 77C, Psychology as Religion. This is one of our most requested messages, so ask for tape number 77C, Psychology as Religion, for your donation of any amount to this ministry, and may our Lord protect your mind from the subtleties of the enemy.
If you would like to write us, or you would like to request an audio tape of today's program, write to Issues in Education, P.O. Box 3200, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. That address once again is Issues in Education, P.O. Box 3200, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. Please join us again next week at this same time for Issues in Education.